Back together again, you and I chatting it up on Tuesday, April 9th, 2024 on Connecticut Today. We looked at a new Gallup survey out there concerning the consumer market and current attitudes around electric vehicles. Blogger Chris Powell checked in regarding a recent controversy at the state capitol on how mothers are referred to in an appropriations bill. And a Yankee Institute blogger, Megan Portfolio, stopped by to update the latest state employee contract costs.
So I'm assuming, and I know it's, you shouldn't assume because you and me, yeah, we know that. We were taught that by our moms, our dads, and grandma and grandpa years ago. I'm assuming that the people who set policy in this state, the great state of Connecticut, the Democratic People's Republic of Connecticut, read. I would hope that they read. The simple thing about reading. Remember that old thing we learned in school? Okay, class, we start on the upper left-hand corner. We read from left to right, and then we go to the beginning of the second line, go one line down, and then left to right, left to right, left to right. Got that? Okay. And the reason I bring that up today is something was proven out that I've said and other hosts have said and anybody with common sense has said over the last couple of years as we wrestle in cha-cha with this stupid, this idiotic, this utterly asinine push to start phasing out gasoline-powered vehicles by some sort of timeline. Now, eventually, let me say this again, I'm sure 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years down the road when I won't be here, but many of you folks, God willing, as long as the creek don't rise, as they say, you will be here. And the changeover to a majority electric vehicles or, I don't know, hydrogen-powered vehicles away from internal combustion engines, gasoline, diesel, it will eventually happen, but it'll happen the natural way by, consumer acceptance, by people saying, hey, this fits me now, the technology fits me now, the price fits me now, the reliability fits me now, the range fits me now, the charging options fit me now. Yeah, so it's natural, and it's happening. But again, a new survey came out yesterday proving pretty much beyond the shadow of a doubt what everybody is saying. Stop the stupid, idiotic, only to feel good and get a big hug from the green crowd. Mwah. Stop the idiotic mandates for phasing out gasoline-powered cars because it's happening. It's happening. Now, the other thing this survey shows is that it's happening, but here's the other problem that you're running into, all right? There is, at least at this time, in April of 2024, there is a significant amount of the population of the country that doesn't want to hear anything about electric vehicles. They just don't. And you could make them as cool and nifty as you want with all the bells and whistles. Ooh, and they're whisper quiet and they have all the leather. And there's a large chunk of the population that doesn't care. They don't care. Lipstick on a pig, what's the old phrase? It's still lipstick on a pig. The vehicles are fine, but a lot of people do not care. What am I talking about here? A new survey came out yesterday in the middle of all the eclipse craze. 7% of Americans. Now, follow along here, because again, I sincerely hope, hello, that a lot of the stoonads in Hartford are listening. Maybe this survey should be mimeographed. That's old school, right? Xeroxed. maybe they should give out copies of this. By the way, you know who you are if you're listening up at the Capitol. New survey by the Gallup people, 7% of Americans report that they own an electric vehicle. That's up from 4% a year ago. Now, the quick math in my head, in my dopey head, I think I'm doing this right, but correct me if I'm not, that seems to me to be a 75% jump. So 7 out of every 100 cars on the road, up from 4 out of every 100 cars on the road last year, is an EV. Look at that. people actually making the decision on their own. Whether it's a primary vehicle, a secondary vehicle, they like the range, they have chargers near them, or maybe at work, or maybe they forked over the $2,000 or $3,000 it costs to put in that high-output charger at home. But you see that? How about that? Son of a gun. It's the marketplace. It's the consumer making the decision. Oh, my God. We can't have that, can we? Oh, geez. Because the planet's going to die. No, relax. The planet's fine. Take it easy. Now, that increase, the 4% from 7%, so 7% rather from 4% a year ago. So a year ago, it was 4 out of every 100, right? Now it's 7 out of every 100. However, that increase is matched by an equal decline in the percentage saying they're seriously considering buying an EV. Oh, my God. So 12% were considering buying an EV a year ago. Now it's 9%. Look at that. So again, you still have a prospective chunk of people either buying it and jumping the percentage of ownership from 4% to 7%, or it's working in the reverse. Yeah, you had 12% of people thinking about it. Now you're down to 9%. Okay, now, follow along with me further here. And this is the part that the stoonods at the state capitol don't understand. Fewer Americans, 35% now this year, down from 43%, say they might even consider buying an EV in the future. So you only have, right now, one, roughly, let's round it up to 35%. You've got roughly, or round it down rather, you've got roughly one in three people saying they might even consider an EV. Now, that's a pretty good chunk, but it's nowhere near anything that's going to move heaven and earth here. That was 43% in 2023. So think about this. Overall ownership is up, even though the number of people who are considering buying an EV, right, or are seriously considering buying an EV is going the opposite way. So there are more people who are, or rather fewer people rather, who are thinking of buying an EV, basically, and fewer people seriously thinking of buying an EV, seriously. But at the other end of the spectrum here in this survey, EV ownership is up. So what am I talking about? It's pretty simple. It's pretty simple. The people who want these things will buy them if they fit their lifestyle or lifestyles or family structure, or if they're just looking for that second or third family vehicle. Again, sales keep going up without stupid government mandates. How about that? The consumer saying, look at this widget. look at this cog from Cogswell Cogs. Right? Look at this sprocket from Spacely Sprocket. Why, honey, aren't we sprocket or cog shopping now? Let's do that. And they end up buying the thing. Again, ownership this year is 7% of all vehicles, says here by Gallup. It was only 4% a year ago. That's a pretty good jump. You jump 75% in 1 year, that's not bad. But the problem is, a lot of people either are not considering at all or seriously considering this. Overall, less than half of adults, 44%, now say they're either seriously considering or might consider an EV in the future. That's down from 55% in 1 year. 1 year. That's not a burgeoning market, even though sales are up, technically. The market is not good. while the proportion not intending to buy one, saying, look, I'm never going to buy an EV at this time, increased from 41 to 48%. So you have almost half the people now, half the people, saying, no, the EV is not for me. What's the point of all this? I open with this today because all the lawmakers in Hartford have to do, all they need to do is take a breath and look at this. We don't need dumb mandates. We don't need these idiotic mandates of saying by 2027 we're going to do this, or 2029 we're going to do this, or 2035. No, you know what we'll do, what we do when we do it? The market. There are more and more and more EVs on the roads every day without the governor, without legislative Democrats, without all these environment groups telling us to go out and buy them. Damn it, or you're killing the earth. So again, this Gallup survey, I'll put this on the Facebook page when I get a chance later on. Ownership of EVs is increasing. It ticks up. But fewer non-owners want to buy one. Gee, what a shock, no pun intended. Wait a minute, the market is dictating? How is that? I'm so stunned. How can that be? You mean the noted erudite and learned lawmakers in Hartford don't have it right? My God. Ferris is with us. Ferris, what's up with you today? Hello.
Yeah,
yes.
And from Clark's.
Yeah.
Let me get this right. Clark's.
Yes,
no
Clark's.
E.
Yes.
You know, some Clark's have an E.
Yes.
Clark's Seafood and Chop House.
Yeah.
North Myrtle Beach on the marina.
What are you right. laughing at? Why are you laughing?
Because I'm listening to the most entertaining talk show.
It's not. No, you're not. You know what you're laughing at? There's strippers there. There's pole dancers there, right?
There's not. But hear me out now. I don't want to hear anything about traffic or weather or anything else.
Well, no. That's part of the show. So hurry up.
But I have to. We have to talk about the serious issues of the day.
Well, guess what? Listen, I don't have time. Have another cocktail. And a regular guest to the program here, Chris Powell, who blogs and writes columns about things of interest, including Mr. Powell, a couple of white suburban legislators last week telling a couple of minority legislators how they should refer to women. And pregnant women, because, of course, we have to be inclusive. Chris, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm great to be here with you, Paul.
Chris, this is the more, you know, the more I read this over and over again, this is real lunacy here. And I think one of the things I love that you pointed out in your column is, like, who's trying to lecture who on here? But for anybody that might not have followed this, set this up for us.
Yeah, last week there was a hearing of the General Assembly's Appropriations Committee on a bill that supposedly was about mental health. The bill contained the phrase pregnant persons, and this kind of miffed State Representative Robin Porter from New Haven. She wanted to know why the bill says pregnant persons and leaves out expectant mothers or pregnant women, stuff like that. And she was rebutted by the legislature's leading advocate of transgenderism, State Representative Jillian Gilchrist from West Hartford. She said, I'm going to read her quote as it was reported in The Current and other papers. Pregnant person is actually the inclusive term. It is a gender neutral term, and it would encompass expectant mothers, pregnant women. As we talk about diversity, equity, and inclusion, this is the direction we are hoping to move in this state and ideally across the country. And so the term pregnant persons is the more inclusive term. And so I would ask my colleagues to oppose the amendment. Well, the committee did not agree with Gilchrist. In fact, I think it voted about 2-1 in favor of Representative Porter's amendment to insert the phrase expectant mothers into the bill, but Porter did not move to remove this pregnant person stuff. So now we're We've got a bill that says both pregnant persons and expectant mothers. I was disappointed in the debate, at least insofar as it was reported, because it really didn't get into the question of what does the bill and what does Gilchrist mean by pregnant persons? Well, you know, what's wrong with pregnant women and what's wrong with expectant mothers? Why do we have to say pregnant persons? Now, of course, the implication is that we're going to say pregnant person from now on, but we believe that men can become women and bear children. Well, don't laugh. I mean, this is the implication.
No, Chris,
here.
I'm not laughing at you, but this is lunacy.
I know. Yes,
this is lunacy.
Lunacy is a compliment to these people.
Oh my God!
But unfortunately, the legislators on the committee didn't seem to want to get into the issue. They seemed to make it to want to make it go away. So they obliged Porter, who had the support of the other Black and Hispanic legislators on the committee and the Republicans.
Yeah.
So they put expectant mothers into the bill right next to pregnant persons. But that's really not enough. We should be having a very candid, frank discussion, questioning Gilchrist and the other transgenderism advocates. What are they trying to accomplish with a pregnant person in the legislation? Do they mean to establish a state policy of belief that men can bear children, or that men can become women just by pretending hard enough? Well, what is the objective here? We haven't had that debate yet.
Yeah.
And we should be questioning legislators about this, and particularly Gilchrist. What's the purpose here? But the news media in Connecticut doesn't want to get into these questions either. I mean, all these people behind the transgender ideology, it's like they want to sneak this stuff into the law so that, some years from now, we wake up and find out that our whole concept of society has been changed on us behind our back without any democratic process.
And Chris, when stuff like this comes up, and friends of mine who are in the news media, now, like you say, they mainline Democrats, not the far lefties in Hartford, but mainline Democrats, they cringe at this stuff. But as you say, there's no discussion of this. And Chris, I say this on my show all the time, in issues like this, or when it comes to biological males playing in women's athletics and physically hurting women. Chris, it's interesting. You hear crickets from the so-called feminist groups, the women's groups. They sit on their hands, Chris Powell, and they know this is lunacy. They know this is wrong, but they're afraid. What are they so afraid of? What are they afraid of?
I think they're afraid of the great number of left-wing people who were taking over the Democratic Party. And any discussion of this issue, any serious discussion, is threatening to split the party. I don't know what the purpose, the objective of this phrasing is, unless it's to help get men into women's restrooms and women's prisons, mm-hmm. and into, women's sports teams, and to really legitimize schools that conceal a child's gender dysphoria from his or her parents. We could never legislate such policies in the open. Candidly, the public wouldn't stand for it. But if we sneak this strange phrasing into the law, I think this is a step toward that. Or else it's meant as a distraction from the failure of government in Connecticut to solve our worsening problems of poverty and education and child neglect and child abuse and public health and housing and all the horrible racial disproportions that are attached to those problems. I mean, is transgenderism now getting men to be considered women? Is this now the new movement of social uplift in Connecticut? Have we solved all those other problems, or do we just mean to distract from our failure with those other problems?
And you know what, Chris Powell, in at least some of the versions that was reported about this, it was a male legislator, I believe it was a gentleman from Waterbury, and they put his response verbatim into this, and I'm paraphrasing, but he said, listen, I have a mother, I have a grandmother, and in our culture, women are revered, you know, as mothers. So again, you had this kind of, if I can use a wrestling term, you kind of had this steel cage death match going on here. And I'm sure the Republicans are sitting aside going, shh, don't say anything. Let them go. Right? Oh, my God.
Look, we need a political party, Paul, in Connecticut that is going to require the government to candidly, frankly, honestly address this issue. What is our intent here? Is it going to be state policy that men can become women and that there is no difference between the sexes, that there are no sexes? We should press these people on this point, but the Appropriations Committee didn't seem to want to do it.
Yeah, and you know what happens, Chris? If anybody, you're right, anybody in the print, the radio, the TV, the online media, if they press them on it, they are going to be, by default, automatically, Chris Powell, transphobic. You know what's going to come, right? I mean, that's it.
Yeah, well, I think the media has really, in large part, already surrendered to the transgender movement. If you read closely news reports in Connecticut, as I do, you find the phrase pregnant persons. Creeping in the news coverage in Hartford Current and in the Connecticut Mirror, I read that as a sign that the news media believes that, yes, men can become women if they pretend hard enough.
Or Chris, finally, they either realize it in their hearts and look, you and I have been in management from time to time in these businesses. Okay, just do it. I don't want it to. Not that you would ever do that, Chris, but okay, just do it. I don't want the emails. I don't need the phone calls. I don't need the meetings with this group or that group. Because, Chris, you're not telling me that managing editors and news directors believe this stuff. Yeah, I mean, come on, please.
Well, I don't know what they believe. I mean, I don't get out much anymore, but I'm reading their product, and I just resent that they won't ask the basic questions, that they just shy away from obvious questions here. I mean, what do we mean to accomplish by changing histories of understanding of words? But no, this is just going to pass us by, and these phrases and changes will sneak into law, and some years from now, it'll hit us, and we won't know what happened.
Yep, pregnant persons. Check out the columns online, folks. ChrisPowellColumn.com, ChrisPowellColumn.com. Chris, as always, great to chat with you. We'll chat with you in a few weeks. Thanks.
Thanks very much, Paul.
Appreciate it. There you go. Where, of course, we try and do our level best to keep you up to date with what's going on in our wonderful state, the Democratic People's Republic of Connecticut, the real DPRC. And helping us do that every Tuesday at this time, Megan Portfolio. She blogs at the Yankee Institute with the Hartford Portfolio. And we are talking CBAC. Megan, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing well, Paul. How you doing?
I'm hanging. It is what it is. It's too late for law school, I think, so I might as well just run this sucker out, you know.
No, you're doing a good job.
Well, thank you. And doing a good job is, hey, how about this, is getting a raise. And congrats to all these state employees. Another $200 million. You've just posted this at the Yankee Institute. So fill in my listeners here. What's going on?
Yeah, I'm really going to be cursing this out when I do my taxes over the weekend, if I haven't done them yet. But just a little history. Back in 2022, Governor Lamont signed a four-year deal with CBAC, which is made up of 15 government unions, and they all bargained together under this term CBAC. And they had received a $1.8 billion worth of gimmies that included a $3,500 bonus just because, some raises, step increases. And conveniently, they left the last year of the contract open. They call it a wage reopener. Mm-hmm. Now, this doesn't mean they're obligated to receive anything. It's just that they open it up and have a discussion and negotiate. And they basically, they got what they wanted. It comes out to, it's going to be over $200 million. And I came up with that number by going through 155 pages where each department lists the cost, which includes the fringe benefits. Unfortunately, not everyone was as transparent. That would be the state universities and colleges, mm-hmm. UConn and UConn Health. They didn't give me all the information, so I was only able to come up with $60 million that they're looking for, which is about 30% of the whole contract. But that does not include the fringe benefits. And the fringe benefits are post-employment health care, retiree health care, and then their pensions. But the great thing about the pensions is it's a percentage based off their salary. Mm-hmm. So now that number is going to go up, which obviously, you know, the state has had a historical problem with unfunded liabilities.
And yeah.
It's like we never can get out of this hole.
Yeah, and Megan, you know, every so often when I, and look, let me just to be completely upfront, I have friends who have spouses who are state employees. I have relatives who are state employees. I go out of my way to say, listen, a state needs employees. It can't run itself. And I'm sure most of the employees, above 90%, do. You know, I've heard other stories, but, you know, they do good work. But again, the bottom line is, and I've had state employees call up and yell at me on this, oh, you hate state employees. No. I never said I hate state employees. The concern, though, Megan, that a lot of people have is this kind of, no matter all these guardrails we put in here that we talk about for spending, we have these increased costs every single year that go up. And people look at this and say, wow, must be nice, huh?
I mean, that's life. I mean, costs go up. I mean, that happens even in the private sector. My issue is, with these different bargaining mm-hmm. units all coming together under this CBAC and all getting across the board the same benefits. Now, some departments, like the DOT, for example, they've been doing a great job. You know, they plow our roads.
Mm-hmm.
They've been a lot more efficient. The DMV has been a lot more efficient. So, yeah, some of the departments and agencies are doing a great job. However, when you look at the state college and university system, which includes the community colleges, they're like $140 million in the hole and are looking for more money. And then you got, and they're part of CBAC. So then you got CBAC crying all over social media. Oh, the poor students. Oh, this is going to increase class sizes. Well, you're getting $60 million. I mean, maybe maybe that one department shouldn't be getting, you know, raises, or maybe they should be getting less based on their performance. And, you know, you got to also, if you look at the top employees in the state, mm-hmm. they're all UConn basketball coaches, which congratulations, mm-hmm. UConn men, UConn health employees. These guys are making, you know, well over what our government.
Hey, so. Listen, at least you talk about performing, right? You know, okay, Danny Hurley performs. Gina Auriemma performs largely. I know they got knocked out this year. But, yeah, I saw that list, Megan, a few weeks ago when the Hartford Business Journal put it out. And really instruct professors and doctors at UConn Health. Now, listen, they're brilliant people. I get it. But over $1 million a year. And we all know about UConn Health. In fact, the governor talks about it all the time. It's largely financially. Now, they do great care and they have great research. But for money, it's a rat hole and everybody knows it.
For state employees, historically, it's supposed to be, you know, they don't get paid quite as much
mm-hmm.
as the private sector. I'm not saying not to give them a fair wage, but to make up for that, they get these very
yep.
overly generous pensions. Mm-hmm. They get a very overly generous Cadillac plan for their health care when they retire. So the imbalance is off now because now they're getting higher salaries than the private sector on top of these pensions. And it's just, it's never going to go away unless someone has the guts to address the situation. And we're in an election year. So obviously there's a public hearing for this on Friday in the Appropriations Committee. That's going to go. They're going to vote it out. It's going to hit the House and Senate. And that's going to, I mean, I'm sure it's going to be across party lines. It usually
sure.
is. I believe in 2022, there was one Republican that voted in favor of it. But it's going to easily sail through. It's an election year. They need the union's money. They need the union's manpower, you know, to get reelected.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not right to make the taxpayers, you know, punish the taxpayers for this.
Or at least, Megan, and the guest, of course, is Megan Portfolio from the Yankee Institute, at least do something that everybody has grumbled about for years but never gets done, Listen, if I was elected governor, which I'm telling you is not happening, but...
Oh, please do
if, it. No, my God, Megan, mm-hmm. people have asked me to run. No, because the first lobbyist that walked in my office, I would physically throw them out. But that's another story. I think you know what, Megan, would make people really happy is a complete top-to-bottom study, and I know study is another study, but no, an efficiency study top to bottom, because if we had the guts to do it, it could be done. How efficiently is the taxpayers' money being spent? And like you said, I suspect there will be some state agencies where they're really good, they're efficient, they're tightening up, and others, and I've heard this over the years from people I've known who have worked for state agencies who have said, yeah, I work with three people who don't do anything. Ah, ha, ha, ha. No, they literally don't do anything. And that's the kind of thing where hopefully that's not as rampant as it used to be. It was really bad in the rolling years, but you know that's never going to happen. But, man, could we at least take a look at this?
Or at least appreciate the taxpayers. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at my posts on Facebook, and there's a government employee. I'm not going to say his name or anything. But it's a joke. What time is it? He posted this like an hour ago, during working hours. Mm-hmm. And hooray, he says. Like, it's like a joke. Like, how about, yes, I appreciate state workers and all you know, and their service. But I would like a little appreciation also because we are paying your salaries.
Yeah, and finally, you know, I remember something you said. You know, I think I'm a little older than you, and I remember growing up and hearing my father's store customers and my relatives and my family, you know, hey, I'm going to work for the state. I'm going to work for the state, you know, doing this, DOT, whatever, corrections. Hey, and I used to hear the whole thing, you know, pretty much, you know, in a roundabout way. The pay is okay, but man, the benefits are great. I mean, I remember hearing that growing up, but now it's not, the pay is a hell of a lot better.
Yeah, and again, because of the taxpayers, and it's just like we get hosed over and over again. I mean, let's just look at the pandemic pay. We gave the frontline workers in the private sector pennies compared. Mm-hmm. Some of them are making $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, $6,000 in pandemic pay. Meanwhile, you get the poor guys that were working, girls working in, you know, the restaurants, mm-hmm. and the supermarkets. I mean, literally out there in COVID, and they got what, you know, $500, $600. And then they even cap the salaries. So, you know, people, those making under $100,000, which is pretty easy to do if you're a nurse working a ton of overtime.
Sure.
They got nothing.
Yeah. Lamont dishes out over $200 million in raises. Check it out. It just went up a little while ago at the Yankee Institute, yankeeinstitute.org. Megan Portfolio, the guest. Megan, thanks. Have a wonderful week, and we'll chat down the road. Thanks.
All right. Bye, Paul.
Appreciate it.